all the way to being available for them for sexual pleasure, right? And so I think those are those cultural, you know, archaic, you want to call them, but, you know, unfortunately, they're still not so archaic. They're still kind of, you know, living in our society. I think it's, you know, I'm calling on young men, you know, your colleagues at the universities, young boys, young men, to say, look, we are going to turn the chapter on violence against women, violence against, you know, vulnerable individuals, whether they're non-binary folks or whether they're other boys. You know, we are going to turn the chapter. We are going to be the leaders of tomorrow that are going to end gender-based violence. And I think, you know, young women like you who are doing amazing work on campuses and otherwise, you need to have your male counterparts and really understanding kind of the intersectional gender identities and doing that good work that I know a lot of campuses are doing really good work on that. And it's the young men and boys I'm calling to action on this. To support next, stand next to you and take a lead in listening to what young women and non-binary folks are experiencing say no to the violence, and because I think that their voices are missing in our prevention work.
Well, at the university, we do have like an office for sexual violence. If you've experienced any of that, there are like places where you can go here. So there is like help available. But, you know, I would like to see more being done, like, you know, the criminal justice system actually doing what it's supposed to do, because I'm kind of getting tired of seeing all these sexual assault victims being excused or like not believed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're doing excellent work over there, and we're always happy to support you. You know, as an association, like I said, we have over 300 programs, and there's other programs in our province as well that are supporting survivors in the community. And I think work that's happening on campuses, you know, you folks need to be supported. We're here. We're always happy to not only come on radio, but also meet with you afterwards as well to see if there are any initiatives that we can support you on. So well done. Good work.
Welcome back. You are listening to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM. That was my interview with Ninu Kang. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this interview. And for more information on this program and what they do, go to endingviolence.org if you are interested to see their program, what changes they're trying to make, and yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed.
It's not my problem, I no longer care. The tide has changed. as if we'd never met. Like I'm suddenly a stranger on the outside of the glass. Do you wonder how I'm doing? You never once asked. But I think I deserve to carry on. You were so hard on me for so long. I think I'm not gonna wallow, I don't need to dread. I crush it all beneath my feet like little shells. And I don't think you've processed, and that's okay. I hope you find a good therapist someday. But it's not my problem, I no longer care. The tide is changing and the wind is in my hair.
Welcome back to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse, the programming coordinator at CJSF. You just heard Let It All Go by Yon from the new record Wish I Could Have. Before that, you heard Senya's interview with Ninu Keng, and thank you to both of them for that. Up next, we're going to hear a recording of a press conference that I attended a couple weeks ago featuring Ninu Keng and some other representatives of BC gender justice and anti-violence organizations who met with the Minister of Women and Gender Equality, Reshi Valdez, to talk about a rise in gender-based violence here in BC and the Department of Women and Gender Equality's plans to address these concerns. This was coordinated by Angela Marie McDougall from the Battered Women Support Services, and she's the first voice you'll hear here. The press conference is followed by a quick follow-up interview between myself and Lori Hanna of West Coast Community Resource Society.
It has been a really great afternoon where we had a chance to meet with Minister Reshi Valdez, who is the Minister of Women and Gender Equality, as well as Small Business, Secretary of State of Small Business, and tourism. Thank you. My goodness. And we had incredible representation from all around the province of gender justice and anti-violence organizations that spoke to the minister about key issues for the sector, as well as for advancing gender equality and addressing violence against women and gender-based violence here in British Columbia. We highlighted some unique qualities, some unique issues that are specific to British Columbia. We know that British Columbia is a unique province. Within the country of Canada, it's quite unique in the way that we organize ourselves and certainly how we address the issues. And we're coming on the heels of Dr. Kim Stanton's systemic review of the legal system that had looked at violence against women and gender-based violence through the lens of the legal system and advocating, frankly, for systemic accountability and intervention. So today has been a really important day for us in British Columbia, and this provincial roundtable has been the first time that we've been able to speak directly to the federal government since we've had a new federal government. So I think in overall, this has been a vital opportunity to highlight the key issues around violence against women and gender-based violence, but also to seek to hold the Canadian government accountable for advancing gender equality. We know that this issue is an issue that we think is eroding. There's evidence to show that we're losing ground, and we're concerned, of course, that our federal government won't understand the importance of advancing gender equality now in light of the emphasis on resource extraction projects and quote-unquote the economy, and not recognizing the role of women and girls and gender diverse people and how important addressing gender equality is for the broader economic goals within Canada. And with that, I'll pass it to my colleagues.
I'm Sharon Gregson. I work with the Coalition of Childcare Advocates of BC, and I'm the provincial spokesperson for the $10 a day childcare campaign. It was a good meeting with Minister Valdez, and clearly she was interested in the childcare issue. She responded well, because it's so clear that British Columbia and Canada will not achieve gender equality without an accessible, high-quality $10 a day childcare system where educators are valued and fairly compensated. This is integral to economic vitality in our communities, in our province, and across the country. Unfortunately, in British Columbia, only 25% of children have access to any licensed childcare, and only 3% of those children have got access to $10 a day childcare. Educators are still not fairly compensated. And so there is a lot of room for improvement, and we were heartened to hear Minister Valdez say that the budget for women and gender equality in Canada is not being cut, and so we'll look forward to the federal budget and ensure that we still see that line item. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Ninu Kang. I'm the Executive Director of Ending Violence Association of BC. Meeting with the Minister, Minister Valdez, today, it was really heartening to see all of my colleagues around the table express some of the key issues that are impacting survivors of gender-based violence, of course, across Canada, but in particular, some of the key issues in Vancouver. We know that there is a 10-year national action plan to end gender-based violence, which is a commitment of the federal government. We're 3 years in, and it was really heartening to hear from the minister that the plans are to continue the 10-year commitment to the national action plan. We know that those pillars of priorities that have been created in the national action plan have been created by wealth of knowledge from the frontline anti-violence sectors. And we really encourage the minister to go back to that plan, continue to make a commitment to that plan, and we will work hand in hand with her to ensure that the implementation of that plan is done in a good way. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Lori Hanna. I'm the executive director of an organization called West Coast Community Resources. We're located on the far west coast and the communities of Ucuilute and Tofino. I'm really happy to be here because the rural and remote voice is often not heard. Some things or statistics, so for instance, Tofino and the surrounding community of Ahouset and Opitzit and Estuesta has 3 times higher sexual assault than the rest of the province. So there's really concerning aspects that we really want to bring forward. There's 1 in 3 women in BC that are sexually assaulted, 1 in 10 men, 1 in 2 transgendered, non-conforming people, and half of Indigenous women. And this is all very alarming. And so, but it was really great to hear the minister's reference to the rural communities and how she's really listening to what they're saying. And I actually wanted to see if any of my northern colleagues online would want to speak to any of the other comments.
My name is Lynelle Halakowski. I'm the executive director of the Prince George Sexual Assault Center in the traditional unceded territory of the Kwajalein people. We are 1 of 5 sexual assault centers in the province funded by the provincial government. I was very encouraged to hear Minister Valdez confirm that northern, rural, and remote communities are on their radar, because I was particularly concerned about natural resource development and that being prioritized over women and safety and gender equality. And she assured us that man camps and resource, they are looking at it through that lens with gender equality and gender-based violence. So I felt really encouraged leaving that meeting today and the commitment to move forward with the gender-based violence action plan.
Hi there. I am Lisa Schmidt. I am with Kasan Society in Terrace as a director of counseling and support programs. I'm stepping in for Amanda Owens, our executive director today. We're on the unceded territories of the Kitsum, Kalum, and Kitsilis First Nations. I was grateful to be part of this roundtable today, and I could feel the energy in the room, even though I'm virtually here, and I appreciated being present. I appreciate all the voices, and I echo what's been said already. But something that's just standing out for me, aside from what I had said to the minister that came up that I heard, is I'm really grateful, happy to hear that people are addressing how men and boys are being raised and what's being done to address how men and boys are participating in the gender-based violence, and they truly need supports as well. Women and girls need supports. We need to stop the gender-based violence that occurring. So it's not just the main focus of what are the programs and services that we don't have, but how do we educate and stop this from happening in the first place. So thank you very much for allowing us to represent the North.
Hello, my name is Amy Fitzgerald. I'm the Executive Director of the BC Society of Transition Houses, the provincial umbrella organization for all the women's transition houses across the province, the 137 members. I was grateful to be here today and meet the minister. We congratulated her on her appointment. We congratulated her on the bringing back of the wage of Women and Gender Equality Canada back to the cabinet table. And we committed to working together collaboratively to ensure that the National Action Plan is actually enforced and held accountable. And she made a commitment to that. And we also highlighted the housing need in British Columbia in particular, the fact that there isn't enough safe and affordable and long-term housing for women, children, youth fleeing violence, and how the new Canada Builds Home legislation, as well as the National Housing Strategy, can work together in collaboration with WAGE to meet the housing needs for women, children, youth fleeing violence. And we know that secure, long-term, safe and affordable housing is one of the key levers for women's safety and women's equality moving forward. So we were grateful for the conversation and look forward to working with her moving forward. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Shannon Dobb. I'm the Executive Director of West Coast LEAF. The news earlier this summer that the federal government planned an 80% reduction in the budget for the Ministry of Women and Gender Equality was profoundly shocking to organizations like ours, fighting for the rights of women and gender diverse people every day. We were very pleased to hear the minister today tell us that she will advocate strongly at the cabinet table to ensure that that funding for these vital services is protected. Whether it's in relation to leaving abusive relationships, reporting violence, accessing housing, or any number of other vital services, it is the organizations here today that support and advocate alongside women and gender diverse people, and an 80% cut to the Ministry of Women and Gender Equality would be absolutely devastating.
Thank you so much. All right, any questions?
Yes. Hi, Angela. Krista Robinson, Global BC. I was just wondering, Angela, was the meeting with the minister, what was your goal of the meeting, and was that goal accomplished?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We wanted to center British Columbia and these issues here in BC. We think we're unique, and we wanted her to understand how unique we are, and also to recognize that we have an incredible matrix of support services and gender justice advocates within the organization. So we wanted her to see the power of our voice and the work that's happening here on the ground, knowing that we are prepared to support her here, but also to link arms with our colleagues across the country in order to advance gender equality. We're a little bit nervous about where this country's going around gender equality right now and addressing violence against women. The signals aren't looking great, so we wanted to look in her eyes and to make sure that she understood what's at stake so that she can go back to Ottawa and carry our voices forward. But we have to differentiate ourselves from Ottawa, and we definitely think that we did that today.
What is it going to take to stop gender-based violence, and including all of the murders that we saw within just like 3 weeks this summer of women who were targeted allegedly by their intimate partners and killed? What is it going to take to stop that, and are you confident that she is on the right path to take us there?
That's a very important question, because we highlighted for sure the number of femicides here in British Columbia, but we recognize that our colleagues across the country also are dealing with femicides as well. It's uncertain if we can see what the results will be. She says that the National Action Plan on gender-based violence is a priority. So if we take her at her word, then we recognize that the action plan will continue beyond the 5 years and into the 10 years. But we have to increase the investments in that action plan. And that's something that we did not hear today.
You mentioned that the signals are not looking great for Ottawa in terms of gender equality. What sort of signals are you seeing that have you worried?
Well, we're seeing an increase in everything in terms of the manosphere, all of the regression that we have in terms of violence against women. Femicide has increased. We cannot ignore the fact that we're seeing more women killed now than we saw in 2019 and previous. So that tells us something very serious is going on in the culture. Will the government recognize this and prioritize that? We see from her a commitment But she has a big piece of work to do in order to raise the profile of this issue within Ottawa. But that's the case with every government, whether it's Ottawa or the provincial governments or the municipal governments. Right now, nobody's prioritized violence against women and gender-based violence in terms of ending it. And this is what we're seeking to disrupt and to advance, the kind of interventions that we need that are going to get to the root of the problem that includes prevention, but it's also intervention.
Jesse Monsalve, CJSF. What differentiates BC from the rest of the country when it comes to these issues?
So the $10 a day childcare plan actually started in British Columbia. It was launched by the advocates and our allies back in 2011. It started here first in 2018. The federal government started to invest in 10-a-day childcare across the country in 2021. We will not achieve gender equity and gender justice if we don't have further investment into high quality, affordable $10 a day childcare where the educators are valued and compensated. And we're not seeing that happen in British Columbia right now. Off to a good start back in 2018. We've stalled progress, unfortunately. The federal government has just signed a new five-year agreement with BC. We need BC to deliver and continue its investment. So we've got to see levels of government working together. And we certainly saw today from the minister her interest in childcare and connecting it to gender justice issues.
Tragically, BC is the least affordable place to live in all of Canada, so we are at a deficit there. We're also at a deficit in terms of the support services for women, children, youth fleeing violence. We do a snapshot on an annual basis, and every year in our snapshot, women, children, and youth are turned away from our houses because they don't have the capacity to meet the need. We have waiting lists for our second stage housing, we have waiting lists for our long-term housing, and we have waiting lists for transition houses. So I think the housing affordability really creates a significant bottleneck for women when they make that brave decision to go into a shelter, and they're staying longer and longer and longer in transitional spaces because there's nothing to transition to. So I think we've got a long way to go in BC on the affordability that impacts women's safety. And they return, our statistics show that many of them, 75% of them, return to abusive situations. So they're trading safety and housing in British Columbia.
I'm Lori Hanna with West Coast Community Resource Society.
In particular on the West Coast, our living wage is $27.40 an hour, and that's for a family of four just to live. And that's like impossible. Hardly any employers ever offer that. And with that, you know, rentals, there's, you know, not even affording it. There's a limited amount. So I think, you know, that's an aspect, and it's also, you know, we do have a really diverse population out here. Our Indigenous population makes up, you know, the local schools, it's almost half. So I think there's some really unique things that impact the West Coast, the geography, and it's not only like land, there's constant, you know, on the island, there's constant power outages, there's constant like this landslide, there's constant fires, you know, there's a lot of environmental aspects that go into just trying to figure out how to get people to services that are a huge obstacle on the West Coast. You know, we have these beautiful resources like mountains and oceans, but they also create a lot of obstacles. We have a First Nations community that's a 40-minute boat ride that's over 1,000 people on this area, and they're in a reserve, and they're limited with what they can do, you know? So we're creating obstacles and keeping people in states of trauma because we're not supporting them properly.
And do you see potential solutions for that or
yeah.
strategies?
Yeah, like the thing is, you know, the sector, the nonprofits have the solutions. They have the ideas. There's a wealth of knowledge. It's just, it takes human resources. It doesn't just happen. And it takes longevity. It takes a long time to build trusting relationships with communities, with people, to be able to help to create change. You know, so you need that like long-term funding basically to help create those sustainable programs that build trust to help people like move through their trauma and to heal.
And you know, there's sort of the commitment to the 10-year plan, but that's still somewhat project-based. Mm-hmm. Would you like to see core funding or?
Oh my gosh, I would be so happy to see core funding for our programs. And also, like, you know, there's a lot of funding that goes directly to the workers, but there also needs core funding for the management team to run the programs and even to have the whole umbrella of supports to support the staff. Because what we see is there's a huge turnover. Our transition house workers get burnt out. You know, we really need to support, and they're also the lowest paid in the sector too, similar to ECE workers. So we really need to value these positions that are predominantly women. So for instance, in BC, the minimum, like for every dollar men make, women are still only making 83 cents. And that's unacceptable. We need to like elevate everyone, you know, so we can like, you know, just have an even playing field so people can just work through things. So, yeah. We just need to do better.
When you start peeling it back, it's clear how interrelated it all is too, mm-hmm. right? You know, that, you know, the work of women in traditionally like female dominated mm-hmm. fields is undervalued in the same way that the focus on violence against women and non-gender conforming people is an epidemic, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we just really need a societal mind shift. And I even see it in, like, you know, how we support people who are coming and presenting at our health units, like the Tofino General Hospital, for instance. If you present with, like, a substance issue, it's not considered, you know, you won't get supported the same if you present with a broken leg. But we really have to change our mindset because they're wanting support to just heal themselves. And, you know, and it would be so much more beneficial if we could see that lens that this is also like a mental illness, you know, and not put up so many barriers when someone's presenting because they want to stop drinking, but they need certain medication to do that. They need to be in a safe space. Like it can be very dangerous to all of a sudden try to become sober. So we really need to create like systems that create, you know, like sobering centers and treatment centers. We need to create all the pieces, and we have all the knowledge to do it. So it's just not going to happen without some funds and some government commitments on all levels, municipal, provincial, and federal, like it was mentioned.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.